Hi, this is Craig Ballantyne, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. All right, my friends, I am back with one of my very favorite topics, books. Books, books, books. Hey, listen, I've been really happy with the amount of books that I've been reading this year and the number of books that I've been writing this year, too. We finished up a brand new one I'm going to talk about today, and it's going to be really exciting. I'm going to go through my top 10. So, hey, this is Craig Ballantyne, host of Early to Rise Radio. It doesn't matter where you're starting out today. These books are really, really going to help you out, okay? So they're not the 10 books that were written in 2019, but they were 10 of the, I think I hit about 43 books this year. Some of them small, of course, but I read a lot more than usual. I made time for it. I was reading at night. Three books that kept me up past midnight, and you know that I go to bed pretty early, and yet these books were so good, and I just have to share them with you. So it's going to be a great episode. Early to Rise Radio, as always, is brought to you. It's totally free because it's supported by my book sales. So I have three books now. The first is my game changer, The Perfect Day Formula. You can get that for free, like all my books, at freeperfectdaybook.com/podcast. Then came along my Wall Street Journal bestseller, Unstoppable, How to Get Through Hell, Overcome Anxiety, and Dominate in Business and in Life. And it doesn't matter if you have anxiety or stress, if you're an entrepreneur or just a busy parent, you're going to love that book. And you can grab a copy at freeunstoppablebook.com/podcast. And then my new book, we're just getting it up on Amazon right now. It is called The Perfect Week Formula, because I realized I wrote the wrong book when I wrote The Perfect Day Formula. It's going to be out super soon. I'm recording the audio this week. The audiobook for Unstoppable is some of my best work ever. So make sure you get a chance to go through that. Now, Relentless by Tim Grover remains one of the best books that I have ever read. And I read it every single year. And I want to give a shout out to it before we get to our regular list because, wow, there were days, and I don't think people understand this enough, but there were days when I was switching from the fitness business to the coaching business, and I would go a couple days without getting many sales, and we were supported by the trailing off sales of the fitness business. And I wasn't sure if this whole coaching thing was going to catch on, if I could only get a bunch of, get people from the fitness world that had known me from a long time. Was I ever going to be able to get other people to trust me? And so we tried a million things. And of course, the Instagram kicked in, this podcast kicked in, our email kicked in. Everything's been going great now. But there were some hard days at the start. Days when I woke up and I was really frustrated. I didn't want to do anything. And then I'd read three pages of Relentless by Tim Grover. And even though it's about basketball, it's about the mindset of a champion. And I would read it and I would be ready to run my head through a wall. And sure enough, an hour later, I'd either have a sales call or a sale made or something. And so I want to give a shout out to Tim Grover, who spoke at my Perfect Life retreat in 2018. He got a standing ovation. He brought down the house. He got the craziest question I've ever seen anybody ask at the dozens of seminars I've gone to in my life. And Tim Grover is the ultimate professional. He's a cleaner, as he calls people. I don't even know if I'm at a cleaner level yet, but I'm working hard to get there every single day. So a shout out. If you have not read Relentless, get Relentless. Read Relentless. 3 pages a day combined with reading Man Up by Bedros Koulian, and then You Are a Badass by Jen Sincero, and then listening to Unstoppable, that will keep your mind right for sure. Now let's jump into the list of the books that really had an impact on me this year. And the first one is one, it's only the first half of the book is good, and then it gets into some weird oil and gas stuff, which you probably won't care about. But the book is called The First Billion is the Hardest by T. Boone Pickens. And T. Boone lived a crazy life, and he's passed on, But he didn't make his first billion until he was 68, after he was forced out of his company at age 65. Now, he had probably $100 million, but then he made a billion in those years after, and he gave a lot of it back. Really powerful story. And one of the best quotes from that book is that a fool with a plan will defeat a genius with no plan every time. So he's all about planning, planning, planning. And it reminds me of a book that I read about one of Canada's richest men, a guy named Ted Rogers. I forget what the book was called, but he was a billionaire up here in Canada. And he was the first person to get into cable companies and stuff like that. And he would describe going to meetings and being the best prepared person in the room. He would go into negotiations and they would win every negotiation because they were more prepared. And that was the same way that T-Boone was about everything. And T-Boone had breakfast with his team every morning, breakfast and lunch with his team every morning. He worked out in the morning. He trained hard. He was fit as a fiddle. He lived a great life. He made some mistakes. There was a great story in that book about how, you know, he kind of got kicked out of his company by like one of the sharpest and most ruthless women in America. I forget her, like Darla D or something is her name. She lives in South Carolina now, but man, she just sounds like, a lot of this book sounds like that old TV show Dallas, but she sounds like a shark and I've never heard of her before. And she just sounded like one of the best business women of all time. So if you've never heard of her, it's worth looking up her Wikipedia and getting her name from T-Boone's book. Now, to totally switch gears, here's a book that I've read three times this year. And I want to go back to Relentless for a second. It's almost like I read one book three times every year, the one that just really teaches me a lot. And so this year's book it's nothing like Relentless, and it's nothing like T-Boone's book. It's called The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. And if I was to compare it to a book, I would compare it to The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And The Untethered Soul, there's a book that follows it probably about 7 years later called The Surrender Experiment. So Michael Singer is a guy who all he wanted to do was yoga. And he ended up being the CEO of a billion-dollar company. And he really surrendered to what was coming to him. And he didn't try and force a lot of things in life, or at least so it seems. In addition to running this big company, he also just did a lot of talks and he did a lot of yoga and a lot of meditation. And a lot of people flocked to his world. And he had this kind of spiritual camp down in Florida. And The Untethered Soul talks about the voice in your head. So as you're walking down the street, you hear all these things going through your head. Oh, look at that person over there. Oh, I wonder what they're doing. Oh, look at that cab. It's so dirty inside. Oh, look, they're doing some construction over here. And you're hearing this voice all the time. And Michael Singer wants you to understand that you're not that voice. You're you. And you can listen to that voice, but not be truly affected by it. And he goes through quite a great amount of stories and examples in the book. And he helps a lot of people that I work with. You know, I work with a lot of entrepreneurs who are hitting the panic button, who think that, oh my goodness, this is the worst thing that could possibly happen. How am I ever going to come back from this? And that's just that voice inside your head. And you know that your true self is going to come back from it. Another great perspective that Singer has is that, like, listen, we are truly a speck of dust in eternity. That there are billions of galaxies with billions of stars, and we just happen to live on one tiny little planet orbiting one tiny little star in all of these galaxies. So your problems that you make into mountains are not really such big problems. And that, you know, everybody goes through life and everybody has problems. And some people's problems are certainly more significant than others at the moment. And some of them are life and death, but most of them are not life and death. And when you get that perspective and you think, okay, listen, had a bit of an argument with a friend, a lover, whatever. Okay. This one argument is not going to end everything. And I need to rise above my pettiness or whatever it is that got me into this position and fix it. Otherwise, things will get worse. And it's the same if you got caught in the rain or you got caught in traffic or whatever it is. You just need to have We all need to have a better perspective in life. I shouldn't say you need to have. I need to have a better perspective in life as well. And so it's a great book. And I highly recommend reading it and reading it more than once, because some of it is kind of woo-woo and you need to think about it a bit. But remember, you are not that voice inside your head. You are yourself, and you can't be influenced. And he helps you stop that mindless chatter, which is one thing that yoga and meditation are good for doing. So please get yourself a copy of The Untethered Soul. Read it, put it away for a couple months, come back to it, and then read it again. And it'll be very, very helpful for your life. The next book, switching gears once more, is very instructional, and it is called How to Be a Great Boss by Gino Wickman. Gino Wickman has written, gosh, he must be up to 5 books now. Some of them are partnered, as this one was. I forget who he wrote this with. But he's the author of Traction. Traction introduced the EOS system to the world, the Entrepreneurial Operating System. And from Traction, that went on to Rocket Fuel, which talked about the visionary and the integrator roles in the business. And then there's a few others. And then he gets down to How to Be a Great Boss, which really focuses on the core values and the culture fit and all that stuff, you know, that we've heard from Vern Harnish and Jim Collins and all these great people. And Gino is a very practical writer. And I really found this to be a great book. It was good timing in my life. I highly recommend it to anybody who runs a business, especially those with, like, you know, you're getting into 5 or 10 employees. If you're growing super fast, obviously it's a very good read too. But if you have 30 employees, you probably have figured out a lot of this stuff by now. But it walks you through a very great meeting rhythm. At Early to Rise, we have a very straightforward meeting rhythm called the weekly alignment meeting, which is very valuable to everybody. And then we have individual goal set and review meetings with some of our team members. It's just a really great system to stay on top of things and course correct a lot faster than annual reviews, which are so outdated. But a lot of what Gino talks about in his book is making sure that you have cultural alignment. You know, if you have people that are a C+ when it comes to culture, and even if they're an A+ in talent, it's probably not worth having them. Talent is actually, you're going to find talented people out there. But if you have people that are talented and they cause a lot of problems on the team, it's unlikely that you're going to have a great workplace where everyone's going to want to be there, and you're going to scare off some of the other people. And if you think about sports teams, it's very, very infrequent, especially on the smaller teams. You know, teams where there's only 5 players on the ice or the court. You know, with NFL football, there's a lot of players. So you can maybe get away with a little bit of a bad apple here and there. But the smaller the performing team, if you don't have cohesion among the players, even if you have the best player in the world, but they're a prima donna, it doesn't often lead to success. Sometimes it does. But, you know, you get teams. Teams win championships. And it's the same with your business. So if you have a great salesperson, but he's horrible to other people, it's time for you to read that book and figure out if you're being a great boss. Now, the only thing I would say is it should be How to Be a Great Leader, parentheses, boss, because in this day and age, we don't really talk about being a boss anymore. And when you think of a boss, it's a top-down approach. As a leader, you're really serving people. I really like the analogy of when you're the founder or CEO, you are a coach of a team, and the team is out there performing. You can't go and score the touchdowns. You have to get the players to play up to their best. So that's what I like about that approach. And Gino just really nails it with that book. It spoke to me at a great time in my life. Now, the next book, fascinating book, really great read, Page Turner, True Story. Kind of covers How to Be a Great Boss, kind of covers Relentless, and it is called Goodbye Homeboy by Steve Mariotti. So Steve Mariotti in the early 80s was working for the Ford Motor Company, and it just wasn't right for him. I mean, he was a financial analyst. He could have made lots of money, and he decided to go to New York. to New York City and try and start his own business there. He wanted to be an entrepreneur. And then one day he was mugged. So this is, I'm pretty sure it was the 80s, might have been the 70s. So this is during the time when New York sounded like it was a pretty rough place. You know, back in the days, Taxi Driver with Robert De Niro, you know, it was a little seedy. And that caused him a lot of trauma. And he ended up going to a therapist. And this therapist that he went to was relatively famous at the time. And he had an approach where if you were scared of something, he forced you to immerse yourself in the thing that scared you. So if you were scared of spiders, go in a box with 100 spiders and you won't be scared of spiders anymore. That was the approach that he described. So the guy says to Steve, you're terrified of young people. You had a traumatic experience. You're going to go and teach young kids, high schoolers, who threaten you. And Steve resisted it at first, but then the next thing you know, he's out in Brooklyn and he's teaching high school at a place where, you know, daily the students were setting other students' hair on fire. They were fighting, they were bringing knives to school, all this sorts of stuff. And on the very first day, Steve cried at work, I believe. And at the same time, he's living in Manhattan in an apartment that, you know, the windows didn't keep the cold out in the winter, didn't keep, you know, did nothing in for the heat in the summer. It was a horrible existence. And yet he persisted for some reason. And he's teaching math or something. And one day he makes this interesting discovery that, you know, because the kids would never pay attention to him. And that's why it was bringing him to tears. And he was taking like this train and subway, like 45 minutes a day to get to this location. And it was the worst school out of all of New York that he was assigned to. And then one day he realized that when he did his math examples in terms of entrepreneurship, like, hey, LaShonda, if you have, you know, 5 wigs and you sell them for $5 to people in the room, how much, and they cost you $3, how much money do you keep at the end of the day? And she would figure it out. And then everybody else was like actually interested in this. So he started these entrepreneurial classes. And then he got all of the worst kids into these entrepreneurial classes. And there were days where some of them brought guns, but then they were actually running these classes out of like some post office. It was really bizarre. I mean, this is a tale that you couldn't make up. You know, he saw gangland murders. He got hung over the side of a building by a couple of gang members, like on a 4-story building. He was with one of his students and these gang guys grabbed them by their ankles and hung them over. So I think he peed his pants. He literally peed his pants. But Steve was doing this to help people. And he's gone on to build, you know, this is over 30 years. He eventually got some people involved who gave money. And he was doing this a little bit in Jersey as well. And now I forget the name of the organization. So just get the book Goodbye Homeboy by Steve Mariotti, and you'll find out the name of the organization, which has had 1 million students graduate this entrepreneurship program. And clearly he's done great things. You know, some of these at-risk youths have gone on to become CEOs of large companies, very successful salespeople, amazing, amazing people in society. Now, of course, he's lost a few people along the way, unfortunately. But it just shows you, I mean, here's a guy, he's not doing this for money. He's not doing it for glory. I don't even know what he was doing it for. But he made an extreme difference. And it reminds us to get our minds right about what we can do and how we can help people. So that was just a fantastic book. It was also written really well. I couldn't put it down at night. I couldn't believe the stories that were in it. So shout out to Steve Mariotti and to Vern Harnish for recommending the book to me. Then next, you've heard me talk about Shoe Dog here on the podcast before by Phil Knight. This is one of those books that kept me up till 1 in the morning. 1 in the frickin' morning. Man, I couldn't put this down. It was so good. So Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, the story of Nike, the first 18 years of Nike. So not even like the Jordan years, not even, you know, 2000s, 2010. No, this like ended in 1980, this book. So it's 1962 to 1980. Phil Knight is doing business with shoe manufacturers in Japan in 1962, only 17 years after the United States dropped a nuclear bomb on Japan. So imagine the animosity. So he flies over there just out of college, and you know, he's a runner and he wants to start a shoe company. It's so bizarre. But he goes over there and he gets a bunch of shoes. And here's the thing. There's no email. There's no fax. There's no Twitter. There's no LinkedIn. There's nothing in 1962 except him phoning and them saying, yeah, yeah, we sent the order. And that's all he can do is wait for the order to come after he like wired them or sent a check for $5,000 or $20,000, which is a lot of money in any year, let alone 1962. Sure enough, the shoes show up. He sells them. And this goes on for years, and he's not making hardly any money. And then they have this huge break when Steve Prefontaine, you know, runs in their shoes, and he's this amazing marathon runner who's a, you know, a dashingly good-looking man. And then Steve Prefontaine gets in a car accident, and so their superstar dies. And they just go through problem after problem after problem after problem. And then eventually they go public. But the story of the entrepreneurial roller coaster is a must read for anybody, because I work with so many entrepreneurs who, you know, 3 months into their business, and again, they're hitting the panic button. I'm like, could you imagine, like, you're hitting the panic button because you didn't make a sale yesterday? And who am I to talk about? You know, I was hitting the panic button all the time, unless I was reading Tim Grover's book. But what Phil Knight did is like next level. So you can't hit the panic button, because here's a guy who built a business going back and forth with Japan via phone and waiting 5 weeks. Like, most people can't even wait 5 minutes for somebody to return their email. They hit the panic button. He has to wait 5 weeks. And then the shoes show up and they're all messed up. They're not even the right sizes and whatever. And it's just an incredible story. Again, you can't make this stuff up, much like The First Billion is the Hardest, much like Goodbye Homeboy. You just can't make this stuff up. Next, a book that influenced me to go and get one of these Oura Ring sleep trackers, which has been kind of helpful. Maybe just reminded me of some better habits. But the book was called Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. And there was certainly some statistics in this book that will terrify you if you stay up a lot and drive. So here's a fact from the book, that if you wake up at 7 in the morning, let's say that you wake up and your niece is getting married one state over and you got to drive 4 hours to get there. You get there at noon, you get settled into your sister's house, and you change your clothes, and you and your husband or wife go down to the wedding, and it's a wonderful celebration, and you don't have a drop to drink because you have to be back the next day for church or something. And so at about midnight, you start driving home, and you've been up since 7 in the morning with no naps. You are now as impaired on the road as if you had had more than the legal limit of alcohol. If you're awake that long and you're driving on the road from midnight till 2 a.m., you're as dangerous as a drunk driver. When I read that, I was like, I don't know how I made it through my teens and 20s as a driver, being, you know, having a couple of drinks, being tired as heck. I don't know how I made it through. I made a lot of stupid decisions behind the wheel. And now it terrifies me to get on the road at any time of day, thinking of how tired people are. And drowsy driving kills more people every year than drunk driving. and you hear about some absolutely horrific truck driver accidents because they've been awake for so long. And there really is terrifying stats out there, and also the terrifying truth of how you mentally perform when you go day after day after day after day with 6 hours or less of sleep. The one thing that I found since I got the Oura Ring is I thought I was, you know, at nights when I was getting a short amount of sleep, I thought, oh, well, you know, I went to bed at 9. Well, no, I went to bed at 10 or 10:30. I'd try to get up at 4:30 or something, stick to my regular wake up time. So I got 6 hours of sleep. But no, the Oura Ring shows me I really got closer to 5. So I was actually overestimating the amount of sleep I was getting. Fortunately, I'm good at getting deep sleep. And I've been doing better. I've changed. I no longer eat a giant bowl of grapes at night because I would have dinner and then instead of, you know, I have a sweet tooth, so I would have a bowl of grapes. But, you know, if you get a bowl of juicy grapes, you're basically drinking a liter of water. And so I'd be up peeing a couple of times in the middle of the night. So now I don't eat grapes after dinner. And that's actually allowed me to have more quality sleep. I haven't played around with any sleep supplements or anything. I have very, very good deep sleep. Some nights I'll sleep straight through. Some nights I'll get up. I recently, for fun fact here, I had my second hair transplant. If you haven't heard my story of my hair transplant, the 10 sales and marketing lessons I got from my hair transplant, that's episode 94 of this podcast. But anyways, I did that the other day, and you get Percocets, which are a painkiller during the surgery. I don't use them after. You can if you want. I don't. But I woke up 9 times I don't remember waking up 9 times, but the Percocets woke me up 9 times. At least, I mean, there is other medications that I took as well. So, you know, I fell asleep at 9 o'clock and I woke up at 6:30, but I got up 9 times during that sleep from the day of the surgery. So you probably wake up more than you think. You might not sleep as deep as you think. I question their ability to accurately estimate my REM sleep because it always gives me, it never gives me more than 20 minutes of REM sleep a night. And if you don't get REM sleep, you're basically dead. And I dream every night, so I'm not really sure. But anyways, that book was just fascinating. I could go on and on and on with the statistics that I found in that book. It was really long and also had some of the worst sentences that I've ever read in a book. Like, for example, instead of him simply saying that one rainy day in Seattle, he said one day in Seattle when the sky was crying. I'm like, who says that? Who says that? Nobody ever says, well, the sky is crying today. No, it's raining, bro. It's raining. Anyways, aside from him being a little long-winded and having some of the worst sentences I've ever read in a book, there's so much fascinating information in there. Another thing, especially if you have kids, basically there is absolutely no reason ever to give a child caffeine because sleep is so important to children. And if your child is consuming caffeine in a Frappuccino or an energy drink or Coca-Cola, you're robbing them of sleep, and it's during sleep that their brains develop. So be that hard butt parent and don't let your children have caffeine because it ruins their sleep, Another thing is that if you have aging parents, highly recommended that you set up some type of lighting display. So if they get up and they have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, a lot of falls happen at that time. So if you can have some motion sensors set up where when they're going to the bathroom, great, okay. Lights show up, they get to the bathroom safely and they get back to bed safely, very important. Also, try not to use an alarm because an alarm is basically, it can cause a lot of cardiovascular problems. You know, if you're sleeping, and we've all know this, you wake up to an alarm and your heart starts pounding. So it's better to get into a particular rhythm with your sleep so that you don't need an alarm. And he says in the book, and I've talked about this quite a bit, Mark Ford, my mentor taught me this, was the best thing for you to do for your sleep habits is to go to bed and get up at the same time every every day. So go to bed at 10 o'clock and get up at 6 o'clock every day, and you will be better off for it. And then with teenagers, the world's all upside down. I've heard of schools starting as early as 7 o'clock in the morning. Teenagers need to sleep later in the day. They have these weird biological circadian rhythms that once they hit the teenage years, they can't fall asleep at night and they need to sleep longer in the morning. And schools for some reason, I got to make sure the teacher's okay with this. So we'll just ruin the kids. I know. I was like, well, but also messes up with your work schedule and blah, blah, blah. But it's not good for your kids to have to get up really early in the morning. They don't learn well and they don't get enough sleep and their brains don't develop. And then they play video games and the whole world's going to hell in a handbasket, as you know, as it has been since the time of the Romans. So I know problems are not new, but very interesting stuff from the sleep book. I highly recommend it. Next, I'm going to switch over to a heavy marketing one. This one is called Confessions of a Persuasion Hitman by my friend Ian Stanley. Ian is a great copywriter. He's very practical. He is also a stand-up comedian. He did an hour-long set at my Perfect Life Retreat. He's a good friend of mine. He understands me. I understand him. We laugh at each other's jokes. And his Confessions of a Persuasion Hitman, a very small, tiny book, like 100 pages. It is like one marketing lesson after the other. And not like, you know, differentiation and so on and so forth. But then like, here's how you calculate average cost of customer acquisition. And here's how you can use this. And here's how you can increase your average order value. Very practical stuff. You know, if you get through one lesson a day and you read that thing three times in 2020, your business will grow dramatically. And Ian's all about making more and working less through using smart decisions. So make sure you get a copy of that book. Next up, another book that kept me up well past my bedtime was Open by Andre Agassi. And this is not a business book. This is nothing but a pleasure read. But holy cow. And I mean, it's classic, you know, how to open a book with a great first sentence. How's about this one by Andre Agassi, a guy who was one of the best tennis players of all time. It opens with, I hated tennis. I always hated tennis. And you go, what? I think I'm going to read a little bit more. And it bounces back and forth between his childhood, his time when he was getting close to retirement, his ups and downs, his meeting of Steffi Graf, who he got married to, the way they live their life today, the charities he's involved with. But I mean, man, this guy went through so many ups and downs. He was a bad boy when he was a teenager, and it shows you like the dark side of the tennis world. Really, really fascinating stuff and just so well written. So whoever wrote that book, I know Andre was involved heavily in writing it. It is just fascinating. One of the best biographies I have ever read in my life. Awesome, awesome stuff. So if you want an entertaining read, if you want to be inspired, if you want to see the power of the human spirit, if you want to read some great, you know, battles on the tennis court, if you love tennis or sports in any ways, you'll love this. Oh, and just as a side note, Ian Stanley was a tennis player who also, he actually hated tennis. And it wasn't until he worked with a therapist. So his parents are, Ian Stanley's parents are like two of the best tennis players in America for their age, and they still love playing tennis, and they forced him to play a lot, and he hated it, and he thought he'd never want to play tennis again, but he actually went to therapy, and now he plays tennis for fun. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie The Royal Tannenbaums. It's one of my favorite movies. It's one of those kind of artsy, weird movies with the Owen Wilson, his brother Luke Wilson, and Gene Hackman's in it. And Ben Stiller's in it. It's a very funny movie. And Richie Tannenbaum is one of the characters. And Richie Tannenbaum is a tennis player, and he has a meltdown at Wimbledon where he just takes off his socks and he's swinging and missing at the ball. And everyone's just like very embarrassed because he was the next big thing. And so those two books always make me think of that movie, which I should go watch again because it is so bizarre. All right. So we're almost at the end of our list, and we got a couple of heavy hitters next. The second best book of the year that I read was Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. David Goggins is a former Navy SEAL. This guy went through SEAL training three times. That's a maximum that you're allowed to go through it. So the first time he was injured and he had some severe injury from running or something like that, and he had to leave. The second time he got so close and he got another severe injury and he was actually through the hardest physical training, but again, he was pulled out. So his third time, he finally got through. It just sounds incredible. I've talked to a couple of Navy SEALs since then, since I've read the book, and I've asked them about Hell Week. And I mean, they're clearly a special breed, those individuals. If you're kind of interested in that and you're a man, this program is only available to men, but my friend Bedros Koulian has a program called The Project. It's at moderndaynight.com or something like that. MDK Night, I forget what it is, to be honest with you. But if you follow Bedros on Instagram, you'll hear about The Project. He has 15 men come in. It is only for men because he doesn't know how to do this with women. They have a Navy SEAL, they have Marine, they have an MMA fighter, they have a cop. And they take you through 76 hours of Hell Week, and they break you down, then build you up as leaders so that you go home a better father, a better business owner. So follow Bedros, learn about The Project, become a modern day knight. That is something that replicates it if you are just absolutely believe that you need that in your life. And a lot of people, you know, on the verge of divorce, or who, you know, a lot of guys cheating on their wives, or a lot of guys who just, you know, are passive aggressive bosses, or, you know, just not playing up to their level, go to this thing. And just guys in general who just always want to push themselves to the next level can check that out. So Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. It didn't make me go and run off to the Modern Day Night Project, and didn't make me want to go and do ultra marathons, but it did give me this new habit that I dislike. And that's the reason why I'm doing it, because David Goggins wants us to do something uncomfortable. And so every first of every month, so January 1st, February 1st, November 1st, December 1st, I do not eat for 24 hours. Just water, a little bit of green tea, because I've tried water only, and one time I just had severe caffeine withdrawal when I was on the floor, and it was too much for me to handle. I broke and I had some caffeine, and that got me through it. So every first of every month, and I've had, you know, the November 1st, for example, it fell on the first day of a mastermind group that I was in. I had to be out until 11 o'clock at night. I had to sit through a dinner where everybody else ate but me. And I get through it. So basically I fast from about 8 o'clock on the 30th or 31st or whatever the last day of the month is. And I don't eat a single thing all day on the first. It's my fast on the first. And I love eating, and I read something when I eat. You know, so when this one, the Fortune CEO newsletter hits my inbox in the morning, I have breakfast and I just like, I want to eat when that newsletter shows up, but I don't on the first. And so I get through the entire day, and then I don't eat until 8 o'clock in the morning, generally the day after. So it's really a 36 hour fast. And I do that once per month. And I, as I say that, between 2 to 6 p.m., actually even 1 to 6 p.m., I have to be super busy during what I call the witching hours, which is where your mind plays tricks on you and you want to quit. And you, especially, you know, because usually by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I've eaten twice. And I read a different newsletter at lunchtime. I read my friend Simon Black's Sovereign Man newsletter and Bill Bonner's diary at lunchtime, my little habits. Once I can get to about 4 or 5 o'clock, then I'm good. I don't actually, you know, because usually dinner, it's all over the place, whether I go out or, you know, eat with family or something. So I don't have any rituals, so I can kind of get through that. And then usually I can fall asleep kind of early, but not on the 1st of November. I had to stay up till 11. And in August, I was at my entrepreneurship camp in Lithuania, and I had to stay up till 10 o'clock and sit through another meal there. It's a great challenge. It's a great challenge. So whether you take up exercise, whether you take up a 6-week challenge like Bedros is always doing, like BJJ or rock climbing or whatever it is, or you simply do a fast on the first with me, David Goggins taught me that the mind is much more powerful than we give it credit, and you have to be pushing yourself all the time, because that then leads into the ability to overcome a lot of things. You know, a lot of people, they get hungry at 3 o'clock and they're like, oh my gosh, how am I going to make it? And they go and eat something stupid. But if you can go through an entire 36-hour period, you get control over your hunger. So that's what it's all about. Now, the most interesting, the best book of the year, not written this year, but it is Eisenhower by Carlo d'Este. And Carlo d'Este, I don't know how to say his name. I apologize, sir. But he has written books about Patton and Eisenhower. And this is something that a lot of people don't know about me, but I am absolutely fascinated with World War II. World War I, a little bit. Anything before that Civil War, I don't care for. I'm Canadian. I don't know if that's the reason why. But World War II. So one of my favorite books is All Hell Broke Loose by Max Hastings, who's a very famous British historian. Most people have no idea that World War II is really fought in Russia, between Russia and Germany. You know, 30 million casualties. You know, there was obviously a million plus casualties over in France on that side of things. Most people, you know, as in North America, we only hear about D-Day and that sort of stuff. But there's so much more to it, and I've learned so much reading this book. And I'm just going to give you random facts here. Like when America entered the war and invaded North Africa first in 1942, they actually fought against French people because the French really didn't know whose side they were going to go on. You know, there's some people in France, in South France, Vichy France. Yeah, I don't even know if I said that right either. They were, I believe, on the side of the Germans, or at least they didn't resist the Germans. And then there was Normandy and Paris, and those places were occupied by France. But in northern Africa, there were French forces, and the Americans fought them first and turned them, you know, towards their side. And then they fought the Germans in North Africa, and then they invaded Italy, Sicily, then Italy, the rest of Italy. Obviously, Sicily is a part of Italy. And they learned so many lessons because Eisenhower and the Americans wanted to invade across the channel as early as 1942. But had they done that, they would have got slaughtered. And there's a very little known battle outside of Canada. It's, Canadians really got slaughtered at a place called Dieppe. And 6,000 Canadians dead in one day, or in the fighting there, casualties, maybe they weren't all dead. And the Allies learned a lot from the mistakes of Dieppe, which then helped them with D-Day. But D-Day, I mean, you talk about stars aligning. So D-Day, you know, they had done so much stuff to fool the Germans. They had built up troops, and the Germans thought that the invasion, they knew an invasion was coming, but they thought the invasion was coming up much closer to the northern part of France. And the Germans were fooled by this even after D-Day, because they were waiting for Patton. They thought Patton was leading the real charge, and Patton was held back from D-Day. And so instead, you know, the week of D-Day, there were basically weather forecasters who, man, this is 1940s. Like, people can't get the weather forecast right in 2010. You know, 2020, and basically D-Day hung on the weather forecast of these guys, and there was a storm for the couple of days before, and they said, yeah, maybe you guys will get enough. And Eisenhower had to make this decision, and it was the greatest military decision of all time. And it was basically him, it had to be him flipping a coin, essentially, because as soon as that was over, as soon as D-Day was over, they basically, like a few days after that, they got hit with the three days of the hardest, worst storm in Normandy in 40 years. And they lost so many ships, just, you know, that were like troop resupplies and stuff. They lost dozens of ships. And so they either got lucky, or he was right, or whatever it was. But there was basically a window of 24 hours, and Eisenhower chose it right. Now, here's where it gets even more interesting, is that Rommel, who was Germany's best general, had left Normandy. He knew that there was an attack coming, but the German forecasters said there's no way There's no way that they could possibly attack this week. The storms are going to be horrible. So the Germans think that the attack is coming in North France, and they think there's no possible way it could come that week. So D-Day is more in the middle or southern France, not south of France, obviously, and not in like the Mediterranean, but the south of the Atlantic coast. And then here's the other crazy thing. So Hitler sleeps till noon every day. And people were so terrified of waking Hitler up before noon that nobody told Hitler about D-Day until noon. So 6 hours after the British started the invasion at like 6:30 in the morning, the Canadians and the Americans all attacked each of these different beach landings, you know, Omaha Beach, Juneau Beach, Utah Beach, at 6:30 in the morning. And everybody knew about it at Hitler's house in the mountains, but everybody was too scared to wake the guy up. And so he didn't wake up until noon, and then he had to send some orders. And Rommel had left Normandy and went home to see his family or something. I forget exactly why he went back to Germany. So Rommel, the commander, is in Germany, and he can't give advice quickly enough. Hitler's sleeping till noon. And okay, if those guys were both there, or, you know, were both sending advice, would that have stopped the D-Day invasion from being successful? Probably not. But think of how all of those stars lined up. Absolutely amazing. And the toughest part was Omaha Beach for the so some of the Americans went to Utah Beach, and they had very little problem. But Omaha Beach, from 6 a.m. till noon, the heaviest fighting. I believe that's where Saving Private Ryan is focused, on Omaha Beach. And General Omar Bradley says the people, that every single person that day on Omaha Beach was a hero. And I mean, I don't know why, I just absolutely am so enthralled with World War II, and especially D-Day. So one of these days, I'm going to go over there. I'm going to do so many of the tours. I'm just, you know, because, hey, listen, you know, luck of the draw, I could have been born in 1924, right? Instead of 1975, where, you know, I've had a cakewalk through life. So there's so many other things. And then they got stuck in Normandy. They didn't realize they had to fight through these fields where it was just basically ambush after ambush. And there was so much loss of life. And it's also horrible to think about. It's not the glorified thing that we think of in some movies and the way that war is. So I don't know why I'm just so into this. But anyways, the book about Eisenhower is how he was born in Abilene, Kansas, and he went around in World War II just trying to find a soldier from Abilene, Kansas, and that was like his greatest disappointment. He never found somebody. He was dirt poor, got into West Point because he tried everything to get into West Point. He got into West Point, and then this guy is like, his whole life is to be a soldier, and he never gets to go to World War I. Now, he probably would have died in World War I because that was a slaughterhouse too. And he never went there. And all he got to do was train troops to go to, like, some of the American troops. The American really didn't enter the war until late. Patton went for a little bit, but Eisenhower didn't. It's probably like the thing that he hated the most. And then between World War I and World War II, the American army was like, it was like after Vietnam, nobody liked the soldiers, and nobody gave, you know, there was very little funding, and he lived basically a very meager existence. And in fact, in 1940, the American army was ranked 17th in the world of all armies. Isn't that crazy to think about in this day and age, that the American army was 17th in anything, let alone fighting force? Crazy. So Eisenhower was never actually a soldier. He was only a commander, and made some good decisions that helped America win the war. So I'm not done the book yet. I was reading it before bed, and now I can't fall asleep after I read it, and it gives me crazy dreams. So I have to read it a different time of day. Anyways, fascinating. And that's the most interesting book that I've read this year. And the reason why I started reading that book was because I wanted to find out, how do you coordinate things like that? Because we coordinate events, we coordinate coaching, we coordinate our clients' lives and my business. There's got to be something to learn from coordinating 100+ thousand troops landing on a beach in one day. And so there's a little bit to learn, but just fascinating stuff. Now, honorable mentions. I'm going to run through these real quick. Can you tell I like books? I would much rather just sit at home with books than do anything. And so honorable mentions this year, Profit First by Mike Michalowicz. Profit First is a book that will help any small business to do better money management. You can even hire Profit First certified bookkeepers who will help you find more money in your business, okay, and stop spending poorly so that you don't go broke. Then I finally read The One Thing by Gary Keller, who sent me the book in 2011. Then I read another book called Trillion Dollar Coach about a very famous guy in Silicon Valley named Bill Campbell, who made a lot of money and then coached everybody at Facebook, Amazon, Apple, and Google for free. He was not paid. He was not given stock options, nothing. He was one of Steve Jobs' best friends. And basically he said this, I don't take cash and I don't take BS. So he was able to go in unbiased and coach these people. So it was a very fascinating story. There was some stuff in there I didn't like, but I learned a lot about being a coach. And one of the most important things was I start all my coaching calls with what he called humanizing. You know, we can hold off on getting to the business stuff. Let's talk about you. And that kind of makes common sense, but he was very famous, and he Eric Schmidt from Google would call Bill Campbell while Bill Campbell was coaching high school football. And he'd say, Eric, I'm coaching football. You can call me later. Like, he wouldn't take the call. It just shows you, a very interesting fella. Another thing that I read that you should read, and you can get this for free on the internet, is called The Psychology of Human Misjudgment by Charlie Munger. It's about a 20 or 30 page Word document. I don't know if it was in a research journal or something, but it talks about all the mistakes that humans make when making decisions and how he used that to get rich. Fascinating. And then, of course, my new book, The Perfect Week Formula. So it'll be on Amazon soon. It is my best book to date. I've had so many clients who have sent advanced copies to say, Craig, this is better than The Perfect Day Formula for sure. It's as good as Unstoppable. And I'm about to go create the audiobook for it. So watch for that. My next books to read, I'm going to read a book by Carlo d'Este on Patton. Patton was a crazy person Eisenhower saved Patton many times because Patton slapped a couple of his soldiers and you can't do that. He should have been kicked out. He said a couple of other things about the British fighting force, and everybody wanted Patton removed, but Eisenhower stuck up for him. So Patton owes Eisenhower, even though they disagreed on a lot of things. I'm going to have my annual reading of Ready, Fire, Aim by Michael Masterson, my mentor, who also goes by the name Mark Ford. And I'm reading The Ultimate Sales Machine by Chet Holmes. You really need to read that if you have a business. So listen, my friends, I love books. I want you to, you know, even if you don't read the books, just understand I'm going to download all the best lessons from the books, in our writings, in our videos, in everything to help you out, okay? So drop me a message on Instagram at Real Craig Ballantyne. Tell me what book I need to read. Drop me an email at support@earlytorise.com. Tell me how this helped you. Tell me what book you want to read next and get a copy of The Perfect Day Perfect Week Formula. All right. So can't wait to hear from you. Go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star ranking and review. Let me know if I talked way too much about World War II or if I'm missing the greatest World War II book that's out there. Life, my friend, is too short not to go after what you want. So let me know so that I can help you go and grow. If you want to get to the next level, here's what to do next. Go over to craigballantyne.com if you want to work with me at my next coaching event. I'm going to go around the world. I won't talk about books all day, but we can definitely talk about books. But I will help you get more strategy, discipline, and clarity for your business so that you go and live the life of your dreams. All right? So thanks for tuning in, and may a book arrive under your Christmas tree this year so that you can tell me all about it. All right. Head over to craigvalentine.com, send me a message, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend. Can't wait to come back to you next week to save you a whole lot of time in a new time management, time ownership, productivity session. Bye-bye, everyone. This is Craig Valentine from Early to Rise.